From sprains to fractures, get expert care quickly at the University of Kansas Health System. Walk-in orthopedic care is open weekdays, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 to 2, at I-435 and Null. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
I feel like he just does a great job, you know, helping out, you know, making players understand the significance, you know, the game plan, especially when it's, you know, directed towards him. I feel like he opens up a lot of opportunities for a lot of those guys inside, especially when he's, you know, causing so much attention to come his way, you know, and things like that. You know, we speak on it and we harp on it a lot, you know, with the interior guys, you know, we're like, yo, Chris getting this, you know, this double team, or, if, you know, the, if we know the slide's coming this way, we know we got to take advantage of that. You know, take advantage of a lot of things. So on that note, I'll be able to talk to you more about it after Super Bowl.
That was Chiefs defensive end Frank Clark speaking with the media yesterday. And I think, Nate, you agree, he was excellent at the podium.
Man.
He's locked in.
He ran down a scouting report of the whole Eagles
offense. I felt like
offense.
I was talking to one of the coaches.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly right.
But, yeah. And I, you know, I like Frank Clark anyway because microphone plus Frank Clark equals love. And it's playoff Frank. And so, Stan, I want to play a clip or two for you from Frank Clark. Here we're talking about, I asked him about just his specific challenges going up against the Eagles offense.
What are some of the challenges specifically for your position going up against the read option and quarterback that runs the ball so effectively like Jalen Hurts?
Well, this is a college type of running scheme, you know, the type of offensive scheme. And I don't mean like, you know, the level that they're on. It's just that, you know, you start to see 2013 Ohio State Buckeyes, Jim Tressel, that type of offense, you know, where this type of scheme was getting introduced, you know, earlier on. I kind of was a part of that group, you know, where this was coming around. So I understand it fully. It's a lot of discipline type of things at the end. He's kind of coming out. Ken, if you remember back then, Jim Tressel, he used to actually always key to the ends. It was a defensive end. He keyed the defensive ends. Watch the defensive ends. They were disciplined. If they stayed on the line of scrimmage, read options, read zones, different things like that. Just to slow them down, read zones with screen looks and stuff to see if they ran to the ball and things like that. So it was a scheme basically to slow down the defensive ends, to get them to play a disciplined style of game. And I feel like that's what we're going to get a lot of. You got a great offense, man. They're a very high power. They're a high scoring offense, second to us. But at the end of the day, when you're able to, you know, do a lot of things that they're able to do, give a lot of mixed looks, you know, it kind of makes it hard on the defensive line.
So he was talking about his experience going up against Ohio State when he was with Michigan. But I think, Nate, you brought this up? Someone brought this up about, and I'll ask you this, Dan, the fact that there are so many young players, rookies, yeah, and second-year players. Nick Bolton was asked about it as well. He's a second-year you know, linebacker. So many rookies and young players on this defense that were in college recently and saw more of this than you do in the NFL. Do you think that helps the Chiefs and their ability to deal with the unique challenges that Philadelphia's offense will present?
I do. I think the Chiefs with Steve Spagnuolo match up well with this. Micah Parsons, do you think he's a pretty good defensive player for the Dallas Cowboys?
Yes. Pretty good.
The Eagles put a clown suit on,
yes,
him by not blocking him. They didn't block him. They read him and let him stand there and watch the running back run by him or Jalen Hurts go around him all day long. So it's a very good scheme if it's run well. They don't. It's all that option that used to come back when the wishbone was there in Oklahoma and Texas and all those teams ran it. It was like, we're not going to block your best players. We're going to let them read. And we have two choices. You decide which one you want to take, and the other one will have the football. So what do you do? Do you leave your defensive ends out there and make them make plays? Frank Clark is going to be put in a tough situation. And if Jalen Hurts is closer to full speed, that will not stop it. The big question in this ball game, the biggest question in this game is Jalen Hurts' health, in my opinion. Jalen Hurts, when he played throughout the season as a starting quarterback, was 16-1. When he played before he got hurt, he was running at a speed that was unbelievable. He's a true running quarterback who's learned how, like Josh Allen, to be a true passing quarterback. So he played both sides. He truly was fighting for the NFL's best player. Patrick Mahomes passed him up, but they were in a close race of who was the MVP this season. That's how Jalen Hurts had picked it up. Jalen Hurts, during the season, had running plays called where he ran the football 11 times per game on average. So he was just as effective as a running back. And that, with their offensive line as good as it is, they clean things up. Jalen reads the edge, and their average running backs look better if he makes the right reads. Then you do the play-action passing off of it, the RPOs and all that, and the Philadelphia Eagles offense has great balance. It's very hard to stop. Now, Jalen Hurts was not at full speed at the end of the year, and against the Niners, he was grimacing every time he got hit, and he was sliding. He looked like Kyler Murray. He'd gain 3 yards and slide. You go back and watch the tape earlier this year, he'd gain three and then outrun somebody for 5 or 6 and maybe put his shoulder down and make it 8 or 9 while he gets shoved out of bounds and doesn't take that hard a hit. Is he healthy? I know Patrick Mahomes being healthy is a big question around the country, right? Obviously, you'd like to have Patrick be more healthy, but he can adjust more easily to play a different style game because Andy Reid is brilliant and Patrick Mahomes is the best. The Chiefs can adjust better than the Eagles. If Jalen Hurts is not full speed, or closer to it, if he's not a running threat with aggression, putting it all on the line, then the Chiefs are probably going to win the game, what should be an even game. Now, how do the Chiefs stop it? Well, there's two ways the Chiefs can stop it that other teams can't. Micah Parsons had no chance. Frank Clark's going to have no chance. They'll read him, and he won't make the tackle. But that doesn't mean he's a bad player. That just means the scheme works. Nick Bolton is the most important defender for the Chiefs because he's the run-stopping guy. He makes the Chiefs different this year than they've been throughout the Patrick Mahomes era, where the Chiefs' defense could be run against all the time. Nick Bolton's got to fight through the blocks. He's got to be there. At least a half a body worth of Bolton near the point of attack will stop a play. The other thing that Spagnuolo can do is these young players and Snead's not necessarily that young, but he's not really that old either. The Chiefs' defensive backs can come off the edge and make tackles. Snead, McDuffie, I said last week against the Bengals, you can put pressure on the quarterback if you're the Chiefs because they'll bring the heat, and they've got those guys off the edge who are great tacklers, take great angles, and play with a physical style. Tyrann Mathieu at his best in 2019 caused havoc for opponents. The Chiefs have that same havoc without the Tyrann Mathieu player. They do it with different guys. Snead's the best at it, but McDuffie can do it as well. So what you've got to do is that zone read action's occurring. Nick Bolton's got to fight through and get half a body, even if Kelsey's on him. You know, half a body to say, that running back, if you give it to him, I'm going to stop him for 3 yards. So the quarterback's looking going, that's really not open. I better keep the ball. And Frank Clark standing out there. So you get by Frank, and now it becomes a speed game around the corner. Well, what happens if the Chiefs already sent a weak corner blitz? What happens if there's another defender that shows up who shouldn't be a part of the zone read and's there to make a tackle at the line of scrimmage? And you go, wow, okay, good play. Well, that could have been a 15-yard run. That could have set up the next pass. So the Chiefs blitzing, the way that Spags wants to bring the heat, the way the guys on the edge can tackle so well for the Chiefs, and Nick Bolton in the middle, it's really a good matchup for the Chiefs to have a chance in this game. They're going to have to guess right, but they usually do. Spagnuolo usually guesses right, and I think Snead and McDuffie are so underrated about how great of players. They're like linebackers and safeties who play cornerback and slot defense. You know what I'm saying? When McDuffie was drafted, we spoke right here on this show, and I said what I loved about his tape was when he blitzed off the edge and came in and tackled like he was Tyrann Mathieu. He does a great job downfield as well as a cornerback, but how many teams in the league have DBs, and especially cornerbacks, who can blitz, get to the quarterback, or make tackles? Not very many teams in the NFL have it, and hardly anybody calls it the way Spags does. So you're going to have to rely on that man-to-man defense downfield, but what do we say in the playoffs? They don't throw the flags as much for interference or contact downfield, right? It's an advantage for the Chiefs to lock down man-to-man, not get called for the penalties, and bring guys off the edge. And you've got to bring someone extra, and Nick Bolton's got to win the battle. I think the Chiefs have a chance. to slow down what is a really good offensive scheme with Jalen Hurts.
So I listen to Daniel Jeremiah's podcast pretty religiously. I love the insight that he gives on a lot of things. And what you're talking about with the defensive backs tackling was something that I took note of. He talked about this at one point during the season where he said, you know, he likes to study the way the offenses evolve and play calling changes and all that. And he was talking about how the best running teams in the NFL today figure out where your weak link is. And if you've got a DB that doesn't like to tackle, they get him matched up where he's going to have to make a tackle in the run game over and over and over again. And they're going to go after it. And he was talking about how some teams that are a little ahead defensively have figured out that anymore, if you're going to be a DB in the league, you can't really be just the cover guy anymore that doesn't tackle. And he singled out the Chiefs as one of those teams. I think it's interesting. McDuffie suffered a head injury making a tackle before the season, and Snead suffered a head injury making a tackle, you know, crashing down and making a tackle on running back. They're not afraid to stick their nose in there. Sometimes they pay the price for it. McDuffie made an incredible tackle on Jamar Chase, shedding a blocker, first drive of the game for the Bengals last time around. And Watson and Josh Williams are both big corners too. I mean, I think that's a great point you're making right there, because you know this as well as anybody. I mean, Bill Snyder is one of the pioneers of this scheme of offense of let's get the numerical advantage. When the quarterback's a running, you know, threat, you have the numerical advantage now. So it's going to take the whole team to make tackles on that, right? Like it's not going to be just one guy that's going to be able to be in the mix. So all those corners and DBs are going to have to make plays.
Yeah, I think the Chiefs have a chance. If Jalen Hurts were week five healthy, no one in the NFL, everybody's worn out, right? Kelsey's back pops up. I mean, they are battling more injuries than you can imagine. We know about Patrick Mahomes' ankle. But even without his ankle, he's just bruised and battered, and that's part of the season. So we can't act like Jalen Hurts deserves to be week five Jalen Hurts. But if you go back and watch the tape of him earlier in the year, the Eagles will have the advantage in this game, because no defense has the answer when Jalen Hurts is running the offense and he's completing passes downfield. He's grown up like Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. Josh Allen was a physical runner, but then he turned into a quarterback whose completion percentage is right there with the Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady's and Aaron Rodgers of the world. And you're going, whoa, you can run and you can throw like those guys? And that's what Jalen Hurts did. He surprised everybody. Going into the season, no one knew if Jalen Hurts should even be the Eagles' long-term quarterback. Mm-hmm. They thought, yeah, well, maybe, we'll decide. He took him to the playoffs last year, but we're not completely sold on this. But then he upped his game. He's completing the ball accurately downfield. And if they get anything going in a running game, then it leads to good passing. The Eagles actually want to be a passing team more than a running team, right? They want to throw the ball early and then run the ball to finish off the game. But the quarterback run game is so important, and Jalen Hurts is not 100%. He's not close to it. And so where will his health be? Will he say, I got enough in me that I can lay it on the line? Like Patrick Mahomes on that last play had so much adrenaline at the end of the game, at the end of his season, if they don't win, he just sprinted and, you know, lost his head. Forget that he's injured. He went out and did it. Jalen Hurts, if he goes, this is my one time to win a Super Bowl, I don't care if I can walk the day after the Super Bowl, and goes out and runs, he could run for 60 yards in this game. And if his shoulder is able to throw the ball accurately, they're unstoppable. They are so good if he runs the ball well. But with him running the ball on the average, then you start going, hey, the running backs aren't awesome. They're just good. And now you can kind of get around and get the passing game. But I think the Chiefs, Spagnuolo will not let them, he will not play base defense and let them block it up and get that zone read on your defensive end. He's going to cause havoc. He's going to have extra guys coming, and that could slow that down. If he guesses wrong, there could be a receiver open downfield for a touchdown. But I think the big thing for the Eagles, if here's how I start with you guys. Chiefs are the best team in the NFL. Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl. Now, how would that not happen? That's how I look at it. How, if you're looking at, sure, a variable, turnovers, I would say Jalen Hurts, the less health he has and ability to run, that hurts their chances. And I think the other thing the Eagles need to do is play from ahead. The Chiefs can win any kind of game. Chiefs down by 13 at halftime, it's still going to be a close game. But the Eagles' best chance to win is if they can just be ahead. Doesn't matter if it's 7-6, 10-7. As long as they're ahead, then their whole offense becomes effective. They can drive the ball down the field slowly. And that doesn't mean they don't like big plays, but their comfort level is, let's just gain 4 or 5 yards on this play. And they just keep doing it. And Kelce, as a center, never gets tired. They have such diversity. Do you ever see him pull and block? He looks like the best fullback in the league, right? When he snaps a ball and takes 2 steps, he changes from the best lineman to a fast fullback who can get anywhere on the field and block people up. They have a great offensive scheme. They've got wide receivers that are good, big, fast. They've got it all. But if they're behind and you know that zone read isn't going to hurt you and they've got to throw the football, doesn't the advantage immediately go, can Jalen Hurts throw from the pocket and go bring a team back to win a Super Bowl? And the odds go down tremendously because Jalen Hurts has proven so much over the last year plus, so much. But still, it's a big question to say, if you're not full speed running and you're behind so you can't rely on a slower paced movement of the football, you've got to throw. Then the Chiefs pass rush comes into play, and now you're looking at a different Chiefs team. The secondary's better. The pass rush is better than it was the last 5 years. We saw it against the Bengals. When the game was on the line, what did the Chiefs do? Sack the quarterback. And they put pressure on Burrow and made him look, he struggled. He was not his best self because the Chiefs pass rush is that good. We give credit to Chris Jones. He deserves it. But the other dudes were in there causing havoc as well. Mm-hmm. And Spagnuolo will bring the heat. The Chiefs got a good defense. And especially a good playoff defense. Especially a good playoff defense that needs to have variability to go against an Eagles offense that could do a lot of things. You got to play man-to-man well. Chiefs do it. You got to bring pressure points from a lot of places so Jalen Hurts can't get good zone read looks. Chiefs do it. And then you got to have a pass rush. If the game's where you know they're going to pass, you got to rush the passer to cause havoc, and the Chiefs can do it. These things. But if the Eagles are ahead, if the Eagles are ahead the whole game, then it's going to be it's going to be scary because Jalen Hurts and this team is good, and they can. It is hard to stop them. It's hard to stop them for 3 downs and make them punt. And guess what? They may go for it. And that 4th down quarterback sneak, that's almost going to have to be a play almost illegal now, because have you seen him do that quarterback sneak? Jason Kelce dives to the ankles of the defensive lineman, and they rugby scrum it and push forward. It's almost unstoppable. And so if they're in a situation, they're going, hey, this is Super Bowl. It's 4th and 1. Let's just go to the quarterback sneak. They're going to have a high confidence level of going for 4th down more than you should. And to beat the Chiefs, the fact is to beat the Chiefs, you got to let it fly. Not to the Chargers level. He was an idiot, okay? But I'm saying for a Super Bowl, the last thing the Chiefs want to see is it's, 50-yard line, 4th and 1.5, and the Eagles should be punting, and they go, no, let's just run that quarterback sneak because we're scared of Patrick Mahomes. If the Eagles execute it and keep the ball, the Eagles are really good, and the Chiefs are really good. I've never seen a more even game. I've never prepared for a more even game in all the years that I've been studying this.
Okay, so let's talk about the Eagles' defense against the Chiefs' offense. I saw some people tweeting out from Pro Football Focus that the 4 best offenses that the Eagles face this year were the Lions, the Jags, the Cowboys with Dak Prescott, and the Packers. And you look at those 4 games, those offenses averaged around 33 points a game against the Eagles. And then the Eagles get to the playoffs, and they face Daniel Jones and then Brock Purdy / Josh Johnson at quarterback. The Chiefs had to face, I think Trevor Lawrence is better than any of those quarterbacks, and then they had to face an elite quarterback in Joe Burrow. They're battle-tested. They've gone through the fire. The Eagles didn't get tested in the playoffs. And you can see, 38-35 against the Lions, 40-33 against the Packers, 40-34 against the Cowboys. They when they play an elite offense or even a really good offense, they've had some struggles, and they have not faced a quarterback as good as Patrick Mahomes. Is that just Chiefs fans searching for reasons to pick the Chiefs, or do you think there's meat on that bone? Is there something there that the AFC is better, they have the better quarterbacks, the Chiefs have the tougher road, and so they're the battle-tested team that's going to be that's going to be the tougher route in the Super Bowl?
Well, I'm always going to say the Chiefs are more battle-tested and the hardest team to beat in the Super Bowl, because just even the two-week hype machine that goes on, the Chiefs are used to all this. You know, what happens at the hotel and what's security going to be like and all those things. So teams that with experience like the Chiefs have all the advantages. Now, get back to the Eagles. I'm not as much into that fact of saying that the Eagles haven't faced legitimate quarterback play, etc. This is the NFL. It rarely ends up being the conclusion you have. But are the Eagles a perfect defense? No. So I'll jump along. Maybe it's on the same path they're on or one parallel to it. Right, Stephen? The Eagles' defense is not dominant unless things go their way. If they have the lead, then they know you're going to pass, then they are the best pass rushing unit in the NFL, the best pass rushing unit in the NFL the last X number of years, 5 or 10. Their sack ability, their number of sacks is what, third most in NFL history? Now there's 17 games, we pass the ball more. I get it. They're not the 85 Bears. But they put heat, and they have legitimate guys up front that are dominant. And Ndamukong Suh comes off the bench as a guy who, give me 10 plays, Ndamukong Suh. They're elite, elite rushing the quarterback. Their cornerbacks are good, at least two of them. Now, is it their third one as good? Their fourth one? Question mark. Can the Chiefs find answers? Yes, Andy Reid can always find answers. So the Chiefs should be able to score in this game. Yes, I fully expect both teams to be hitting around 30 points this game. Last week, I thought both teams would be sitting around 20 in a close game. This week, I think both teams are going to sit around 30 in a close game. So you can see there's more offense than there was against the Bengals, I believe. Now, this goes back to that the Eagles are ahead and they know the Chiefs are going to throw the football, the pendulum starts swinging to the Eagles' advantage, because their pass rush is elite. Their defensive linemen are elite, and their cornerbacks are good cover corners. But you know what the Eagles don't do? If they're behind and you can run your offense to its fullest extent, they can't stop the run. Will the Chiefs run the football?
That's the question right there, isn't it? I mean,
but at least he has it in his back pocket. Yeah. You know Andy doesn't want to take the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands. You know he wants to give it to Travis Kelce. So I don't ever propose that, oh, you use your left hand instead of your right hand in this game. But if the Chiefs have the lead and they throw an incomplete on pass on first down and it's second and 10, Chiefs can run, gain 7 yards, and who's the advantage to go back to? The Eagles do not stop the run well. If the Chiefs need to run or choose to run, the Eagles may have struggles with it. But if the Eagles are ahead and they know that they don't have to worry about your run, or they play it like Tampa did in the Super Bowl, what did Tampa say? Run the ball if you want to, Chiefs. All we care about is the pass. There was a famous Super Bowl that Bill Belichick was the defensive coordinator in. Buffalo Bills were elite. The fast-paced offense that they ran, the no huddle, they were playing down in Florida. Remember that, Stephen?
I brought that up yesterday, I think.
Bill Belichick told the defense, and the Giants were a proud defensive football team. He said, I don't care if Thurman Thomas runs for 200 yards. I don't care. We're playing the pass. And the players were so, like Lawrence Taylor, they're all looking at him like, man, we don't let people run the ball. He's going, I'm telling you, the Buffalo Bills are so great that our only chance to win is to guard against the pass, play extra DBs, always play pass defense, and if Thurman Thomas runs for 150, I don't care. And they did not believe it until the game was over. Buffalo could have made the field goal. Mm-hmm. That's how great Buffalo was. But the Giants won because Bill Belichick said, you cannot let Kelly throw the ball. You got to let Thurman run it. That is a great strategy against the Chiefs. The Eagles may come in this game and go, McKinnon, Pacheco, get your 100 yards. We still think we're going to score 30, and you're less likely to score 30 the more Patrick doesn't have the ball in his hands. So this is a conundrum, right? If you're making the choice, do you lean on the run a little bit more if the Eagles take that approach and they're not good against the run? Or you say, I'm going to just go Patrick right in the face of this pass rush, of this philosophy. And I'm not sure the Eagles are going to use that philosophy, but that's probably their best chance to win. It's just go disregard the run. We're not good at stopping the run anyway. Let's don't try to protect against it. Let's rush the quarterback. Sacks equal punts. Let's blow the pocket up and hope Patrick can't move and hope that we can win the ball game that way, 30-28. Does that make sense?
So it does.
Where do the Chiefs go? I can't wait to see how Andy uses the running game. Yeah. Again, Chiefs win the Super Bowl until proven otherwise. If I'm an Eagles person saying, what's the otherwise? Play with the lead. Because then that strategy works better, right? If you're up by three and it's late third quarter and the Chiefs have the football, wouldn't you as the Eagles say, I'm not going to worry about the running game? I'm not going to worry about it. We're up by three. I love our offense. We're just going to rush the quarterback, cause havoc, and hope that works. But if they are down by seven and the Chiefs have the football and the Chiefs can mix in the run to put a nice drive together, the end of third, start the fourth quarter, and get up by 10 or 14, it's not a good situation. And if Jalen Hurts has to drop back and pass and the zone reads out of play and the Eagles game running game doesn't matter and they're down by 10, it's unlikely he can bring their team back. Because the Chiefs can rush the quarterback as well. So having the lead for the Eagles is a must. Not for the Chiefs. Chiefs are so good, I don't care how it plays out. At the end of the game, the Chiefs are going to look around. They're going to have 27 to 35 points. They're going to get it. The question is, are the Eagles going to get to 30 as well? Who's going to be ahead? The Eagles need to take the lead, control the game. The Chiefs can come back millions of ways.
We have Stan Weber in studio. Back after this on WHB.
Hey everybody, Joe Spiker, owner of Easton Roofing here. For almost 10 years, we've been a locally owned and operated family business. At Easton, we work on every job with one thing in mind: integrity matters. I grew up in Central Kansas, was raised on the values of respecting hard work. At Easton, we always make decisions based on the ethical, right thing for the customer. That's what integrity means to us. So if you have any questions about your roof, give me and my team a call, 913-257-5426. Easton Roofing, integrity matters.
Back to the show. Okay, so we'll wait until next week to get Stan's official prediction for Super Bowl 57.
Are you ready for some football?
It's gonna be.
I'm so glad there's an extra week because I don't want it to end. I mean, I wish there were football this week, but okay. I'm so excited about the Super Bowl every year, but man, the Chiefs are in it.
I felt like after, especially Monday, I needed the bye week, but now I'm at Friday, like I gotta wait another week. So thankfully, I get to coach my girls tonight and tomorrow. That'll take up a lot of time and keep me focused on that. And then also, there's some great college basketball that's going on. And what an interesting
especially
weekend.
Especially locally, yeah.
Yeah, coming up in the Big 12 because the Big Four are facing off against each other. At 11 a.m. right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, number 8, Kansas, at number 13, Iowa State. Iowa State in desperate need of a win after getting blown out by Mizzou and blowing a second-half 23-point lead to at Texas Tech. And so it's Kansas at Iowa State. And then at 3 o'clock, number 10, Texas, at number 7, Kansas State. So you have seen all these teams, Stan, before you get into Texas and Kansas State. Just let's talk about Kansas and Iowa State. And first, Iowa State, just not a good week. Look, the Mizzou game didn't hurt them. It's out of conference, but it had to be alarming to see Mizzou shred Iowa State's defense the way they did. But then, you know, and we're kind of going back and forth, just kind of keeping an eye on the score, that game against Texas Tech. Like, oh, Iowa State's up 23. I didn't check it again. And then I woke up the next morning, I'm like, what? Oh, boy. And so Kansas at Iowa State, what do you make of this matchup?
Iowa State does not have the lineup, the five guys that run out on the court that make you think that they're a top 10 team. They've proven with their coach last year making it to the Sweet 16, going from no wins the year before to near the top of the conference, that he's coaching like crazy. They're good. They got a lot of things going for them, but they're a good defensive team. But that has been leaking a little bit. You know, they won a giant game against K-State in Ames, but it was 80-76. Okay, so it wasn't the lockdown defense. It was clutch free throw shooting, which they're not a great free throw shooting team. It was clutch down the stretch baskets. K-State was within a score, and Iowa State would go down and score every time and make tough shots and make it a two-score game, and K-State would come back and score and make it a one-score game. So it wasn't as if there was a last-second shot that K-State could win the game. They deserved to win by four. But it's not like it's a lockdown defensive game, right? And then the Missouri game, they got cut up against Texas Tech after they had a 23-point lead. I was the one lucky guy in the world, I guess, who turned it on about the time the second half started. And fortunately, because I have an extra TV, I didn't turn it off. And I was going, whoa, look at this. And Texas Tech was driving right through the defense and shooting layups. It wasn't as if they were closing their eyes and bombing threes. They were just forcing the ball to the basket. So this game's all about Kansas. It's going to be tough to play on the road. It always is in the Big 12. But where is Bill Self's team? How many times in history have we seen Bill Self look around, and no matter how many players you can count on, Nate, you know this much better than me, there may be seven guys that, you know, are playing at a conference championship level. But where's number 8 and 9? You know, it's just not there. How often do they develop that next guy who you don't count on at all on December 15th, and maybe even January 15th, and suddenly they become reliable? Against K-State, KU had 19 bench points. They had guys make big shots and hit some threes at critical points in the game who you would say, every opponent would be saying, yeah, I'd love for that guy to shoot the ball. And yet they made the plays. Is that just an aberration that Kansas made 11 three-pointers against K-State? Only the second team against K-State this year to have 10 three-point makes or more. K-State's three-point defense is excellent. They're at a percentage right now, basically a 30%, that could be the best in K-State basketball history. KU makes 11. The subs play great. Now, I don't know if the subs are going to start taking it to another level. I don't count it out, Nate. I don't, because I've seen it happen before. But generally, Kansas relies on five starters to play well. And that may be enough, because Wilson is playing at an elite level. His four-game stretch, and I think now it's a five-game stretch of scoring, guys, that he's on right now, is the greatest number of points in a five-game stretch in KU history during the 27 years of the Big 12. No one's lit it up like he's lighting it up, and he's playing like 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. DeJuan actually scored career high against K-State. This game's about KU. If KU plays one of their better games, then Iowa State isn't good enough, even in Ames. But is Kansas, do they still have questions? Like, the bench isn't going to be reliable. How's McCullough going to play? He's put three double-doubles together after he had, what, the slump of a lifetime.
Yeah.
He didn't even score against K-State in Manhattan.
He didn't want to shoot. He was so, yeah.
And DeJuan was passing the ball even when he had a layup. In this game, he was going and scoring. We saw a really good version of KU when they played the Wildcats Tuesday night. And if they're anywhere near that, or the bench is starting to come on like happens so often, then KU's the better team. This is going to have to be KU struggling, and it's about them. Iowa State, this is their last-ditch effort to say we want to win the conference. They got KU in Ames. The fans are going to be yelling loud and a lot of nasty stuff maybe. Heck, they yelled FK State when Iowa State's fans did. The students,
that's when you know you made it. That's when you know you made it. No, that's
so anyway, it's a tough place to play. They'll be riled up, but it's all about KU in this game. Iowa State is not supposed to be a great team, and their offense isn't, and their defense hasn't been elite lately. So can they bounce back and play like they did against K-State? They'll have to, but KU wins if they play their best basketball.
So you mentioned that stretch that Jalen Wilson's on, scoring more points in five-game stretch. KU's record was 2-3 during those five games. And Bill Self pointed that out, not to say that it's Jalen Wilson's fault. You know, he goes for 38 in Manhattan, and if the three-pointer goes and Bill doesn't call a timeout, they might win the game. But they needed him to get 41 in that game for them to have a chance to win. They needed every one of those points. So it's not Jalen Wilson's fault. He pointed, like, that's what makes Jalen such a good player, is when the rest of the team's not scoring, he's like, okay, well, I guess I got to do it tonight. But that's not the recipe for KU to beat good teams. The recipe for KU to beat good teams, DeJuan Harris has to be a scoring threat. McCullers, they don't have to be the guy, but when it's their turn to score, they've got to be able to score. And your point about the bench, when they played in Manhattan, the bench gave them nothing. When they and K-State's bench was great that day. Desi Sills was incredible. So for KU, it's almost just the question of, you know, Jalen Wilson's going to get 20. Who else is going to show up to play today offensively in the game? KU's, for the most part, they're going to be what they are defensively. They're going to be pretty good. They're a good but not great defensive team this year. That's going to be consistent, but it's almost as simple as who else is going to show up to help take some of the burden off Jalen Wilson to score? And if they show up, they can beat anybody in the league. If the other guys don't show up, they can lose three games in a row. And that's what makes this conference so, like this little stretch that Iowa State's on right now. You go, wait, how in the world did the team that looked like the best team in the league lose two games in a row like this? They could turn it around like that, just like Kansas did after losing three in a row. We're talking, boy, Kansas could go have their first four-game losing streak in the Bill Self era, and then they thump Kentucky. This league, one game to the next, you just got to watch because every one of these teams, the top five teams in this league, are good enough to win the whole thing.
Top six.
Top six, I should say. Yeah, you're right.
Don't forget sixth. Yeah. Hey, Steven, if you are busy on a Saturday, you want to treat the Big 12 like the NBA, you can. Just show up with 5 minutes left in the game.
Right.
It's going to be close.
Pretty much.
Just fully expect it to be super close. Even if KU were to win, it isn't going to be easy.
Well, and I mean, it was. I loved listening to both Self and Tang talk after that game. And it's one of the things that Self said is right now, the way this season's going is it's going to come down to which team executes at the end of the game. You know, which team when KU, when you go back to Manhattan, end of regulation, end of overtime, KU has the ball. They didn't even get a shot off. They didn't execute. K-State did. That's the difference in how you play 45
minutes.
When
Iowa State beat K-State,
yep,
they executed in the last minute or two perfectly and still barely won.
Yeah.
So it'll be a really good game. But Kansas is – the win over Kentucky was so big because that was going against Shibue and the giant inside presence on the road at Rupp Arena after losing three straight games. KU was not in a good position and – probably as a bad matchup. And what did they do? Turn it right around. I mean, boomerang that thing back and say, nope, we'll beat Kentucky. Then they proved it with a different style against K-State. And now the question is, are they kicking it into gear? This is the time of year where guys who weren't that good a month ago or 2 months ago start playing well. And you're like, how did that happen? It does all the time for Bill Self.
So this is going to be an interesting couple of days for Texas, because they're 7-2. They have a game lead over Kansas, Kansas State, TCU, and Iowa State. They play at K-State on Saturday and then play at Kansas on Monday. You got to think, if we just get a split here on the road, they'd feel great. But you saw them up close when K-State put 116 up on them. I did not think they would be 7-2 at this point now. And so tell me about Texas and the possibility that they can actually go on the road and win one of these games in the next couple of days.
Texas has transitioned to what their basketball team is, and they finally come out with purpose. They're a Chris Beard team. The Texas grad that came from Texas Tech had them playing feisty defense. That's what Texas mm-hmm. Tech was known for. Mm-hmm. Texas is thought of as being soft in everything they do. So Texas basketball with a coach like Chris Beard and the toughness he tried to bring and the athleticism that Texas would have was a perfect combination. That's why they start the year ranked in the top five in the country. And they start doing some great things in the early season. So congratulations, Texas. But then Chris Beard gets himself in trouble. They now have an interim situation with Rodney Terry. When K-State went and played, we were seeing the transition. That was one of the first games, if not the first game that it was either the first or second game that Rodney Terry was there and Chris Beard was not. Chris Beard was still the head coach. He was just suspended. Well, we could tell immediately studying Texas that they had transitioned away from thinking about defense to thinking about flowing well on offense. So Rodney Terry does a great job. He's been a head coach at two different places throughout his career. He's a head coach type of guy, but he wanted them to play better offense. And K-State going into the game is like, whoa, they're changing. We saw 103 points from them, right? K-State ran with them and scored the most points in their history, 116, opened the Moody Center. This is important for all fans who hate Texas. First game ever in conference play in Moody, Texas lost to K-State. The first loss ever for Texas in Moody Center to K-State, and 116 points might stay as a record as most points scored against Texas in Moody for a long time. So it's nice to stamp that forever, even if they go to the SEC. But Texas had Chris Beard fully fired. Then it became Rodney Terry's team. This team is not playing lockdown defense. They're not scrappy and fouling and making the officials wonder, God, can I blow the whistle again? Have we talked enough about we don't want to see fouls? I mean, Bob Huggins, Chris Beard are like, if we foul enough, they won't call them all. Let's just rock on defense. Mm-hmm. But Texas has found its groove. They know who their head coach is now. Interim or not, they know Chris Beard is not texting stuff to the coaches like, hey, adjust here. Here's what I saw on TV watching the game. It's Rodney Terry's team. They're playing fluid offense with really good athletes who can shoot, drive. They got enough big size presence on the inside to cause you just enough havoc. They can block some shots in there. So they know what they are, and that makes them better. And they've also been able to get underneath the radar screen. Chris Beard's out of the picture. K-State winning the way they did made everyone look around and go, wait, you got KU, we always know they're great, and you got K-State, and oh my gosh, Baylor was a team picked to be first, and everyone forgot about Texas. Now we're at the halfway point, Stephen, and a lot of people are surprised to go, wait, 9 games into the conference play, and there's only one team in first place? Texas? Where did they come from? You know, they've kind of quietly worked their way up. Big weekend for them. They could really put a stamp on this season. They're already in first place. And if, like you said, if they can win either at K-State or KU or both, I mean, this is a real opportunity for them. But I think Texas is a really good team, totally different than the version that was ranked in preseason. Does that make sense? That Chris Beard version of Texas looked like it was the perfect toughness, talent, experience. He's the second-year head coach. They've totally revamped themselves, but they're still really good. And they are not worried about locking down on defense. They'll play defense. They respect defense, but, man, they're better on offense. They're fluid, and they're hard to stop because when they get down court, the first guy that gets an open shot, they're taking it. Steven, I don't know how you coach your girls at St. Gabe's, but I tell you, it's tough to play an opponent that says, first open shot, we're taking it, because you always hope at least they'll pass it twice and our fifth guy will get set. Everyone wants to get their defense set and make the offense work against a full defense, right? That's what a coach dreams about. What you hate is the first guy who's open shoots the shot, and he's good. And you go, darn it, we had 4 guys there, but we didn't get the fifth. We had 3 there. Why is he bombing that 3 on first pass? Why is the guy dribbling down the ball stopping and shooting from 15 feet? You see what I'm saying? They make you pay for any defensive lapse you have, and your coach isn't screaming at you, or that was too quick a shot. Why didn't you make an extra pass? We want a high percentage shot. So Texas is dangerous in that way. I think they found their groove with Rodney Terry. That's a great compliment to the whole program and him as a head coach. This is an even game with K-State. Oh, another Big 12 game. Start watching with 5 minutes left if you want. Listen on radio up until then, Stephen. Probably can get a good radio broadcast around here somewhere with Wyatt and me doing the game. If you like listening to that, it's going to be close. I don't think anybody's thinking 116-103. Neither coach is going to say, let's keep the gas pedal down and run sixth gear. Both teams are saying, hey, let's slow it down a little bit, and the plans are going to be completely different in the adjustments. But I think Texas is breathing really clean air, know who they are, and are just playing with a free mind. And that's why they're the toughest version they can be right now.
This is a big opportunity week for K-State because, like you talk about, for Texas, they got to go on the road and play 2 really good teams in Kansas. K-State's already done all of the hardest work they've had to do on the road. They've already played at Baylor, at Texas, at Kansas, at Iowa State, at TCU. I mean, it's so now, but what we do know is there's no guarantee.
Bill Self pointed that out. K-State, if they play to their full potential, are in really good shape.
Yeah.
Because their ats are West Virginia, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech.
Yeah.
Right? That's their ats.
Yep.
But you better win your homes, and it starts right now.
Yeah.
Because Texas, and then Tuesday against TCU.
Yeah.
And TCU, how injured is TCU? But when TCU is at full strength, they're the best team in the Big 12.
They are.
Their best 10 minutes are better than everyone else's. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Like, they showed it in Lawrence.
For sure.
They're the only team that has 5 starters back from a really good team last year. And they got preseason Big 12 player of the year type of guy in the point guard. They got a big guy, and Lampkin is crafty. And they got athletes who run and play defense. So K-State's got Texas and TCU. If they can win home against Texas and home against TCU, whoa, things are starting to swing. K-State's got a real chance. KU said the formula forever. Win all your home games in conference. Go out and do your work. respectively on the road.
Steal some on the road.
And you win the conference, right?
Yep.
K-State's the one team in the Big 12 that has not lost at home all year.
This, like I said, big opportunity week. I mean, that's why I look at it, is you go beat Texas and TCU at home, you put yourself in a really good spot for the home stretch where the schedule lines up in your favor.
We've got Stan Weber in studio. Stan, we'll get through this weekend. Focus on college basketball.
Yes.
And then Monday it's on.
Is there some more football?
It's on.
Can we talk about football some more?
It's on. We're going to.
Even next week?
How many times are you going to simulate the Super Bowl between now and Friday?
I think we'll do it four more times. We've done three games, and we'll play four more, I believe. So I think we'll get seven games, and that is statistically enough to get some really good trends. Three is a little risky. Mm-hmm. It worked with Cincinnati and the Chiefs because we ended up with a 22-19 final. Right now we're sitting with dead-even games. So far the Eagles have won by an average of 1.5 points, but they're dead-even games. I would adjust that and say that they're all sitting up in the upper 20s.
No pressure at all, of course, on you. But Marco has declared, based on your simulations, he will put a very handsome sum on the over-under based on what your score comes up with.
That makes me a little scared. I don't mind talking about this stuff, but I hate to have it affect people's money.
But I want that to excite you.
I want you to affect my money,
he
though.
He needs someone to affect his money.
We may have to invite him over next week when the guys come over.
I think you should.
Would he like the simulation?
I think
we call it SFL.
I think you would find the whole thing pretty interesting.
He needs it, Mark. Desperately.
Can we play it like dice? Can I throw dollars on the table? This next play,
well, the good thing is you can be passionate, and you can yell and scream. And root for the Chiefs and all those things, because that's what the guys do. I mean, it's as enjoyable a time as I have any time all week.
The one thing I'll say, I've only played it a couple times. The first time I was so confused trying to make, because they go fast and they know what they're doing, that they're talking trash to each other. I'm like, I can't remember what I'm supposed to do right now. But by the second time I played, it's fun. It is fun. They talk some trash, have some fun. But did you hear that? Three times, upper 20s.
See?
Marco, so we'll see after they play four more times. You should have Marco out there. That'd be educational.
We're going to lock you in, and we're going to get you right with DraftKings Sportsbook. We will take a break back after this on WHB.
Oh, my friends at Greengrass Cattle Company are running a promotion for the watch party that you might have coming up next weekend. They are offering one of the best cuts of meat that they have, the tomahawk ribeye, or the tomahawk chop, as you might want to call it. It's a top chop for just $100. Now you say, wait, one cut of meat for $100? This thing is 3 to 5 pounds. It's 4 inches thick. Highly marbled prime beef. I've had their tomahawk chop at my house. It feeds my entire family. And then we have half of the steak left over. You can serve a lot of people with this, and it's delicious. Look, all of the beef at Greengrass Cattle Company is absolutely top-notch because Tim and everybody in his family, they take immaculate care of their cattle. I've been to the ranch. I've seen how they do things. It's right up there in Weston, so you know where your food is coming from, and you can taste the difference. That tomahawk ribeye is a top chop. You can check out their other steaks, brisket, hot dogs, bratwurst, all that stuff for the game as well. Just shop online at greengrasscattleco.com. They'll ship it right to your door. greengrasscattleco.com.
Hey everybody, Joe Spiker, owner of Easton Roofing here. For almost 10 years, we've been a locally owned and operated family business. At Easton, we work on every job with one thing in mind: integrity matters. I grew up in Central Kansas, was raised on the values of respecting hard work. At Easton, we always make decisions based on the ethical, right thing for the customer. That's what integrity means to us. So if you have any questions about your roof, give me and my team a call, 913-257-5426. Easton Roofing, integrity matters.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's say hello to Gary Lezak. Hello, Gary.
Hello, Steven. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. It is almost Super Bowl week. I mean, every single morning we wake up, we have to think, oh, my gosh, the Kansas City Chiefs are in the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, for the third time in the last 4 years, for the fifth time in the Chiefs' history, with more to come, hopefully. But we need to pinch ourselves and just realize every single day, it's the Kansas City Chiefs that we need to analyze and see how they're going to beat the Philadelphia Eagles. Sounds like the injuries are getting better and everyone's going to get healthier here. Maybe not Mecole Hardman, but perhaps the other players are ready to go. Juju Smith-Schuster and company and maybe even Tony are going to be able to play. I don't know. That's what it sounds like within a week or so. And if the Chiefs are near full force, then the rest of the NFL gets to experience what we already know. The Kansas City Chiefs are the best team in the NFL, and they showed it in the first half. They showed it a lot in the first half or very rarely in the second half. But, maybe they're going to put this entire game together this week and show the world who is the best team in the NFL, not just now, but for the last 6 years since we drafted the greatest player of all times, perhaps. Okay, I mean, you have to add in the perhaps for another few years, I guess. But it's amazing. I mean, we have the best team in the NFL. What do you think?
I think you're right, and the Chiefs are going to win, but I have another week before this damn game, and so.
No! No, Steven, I know you have to talk for 4 hours every single day. And that is everyone out there, these guys, Steven, Nate, they have to talk for 4 hours every day about this.
So, we get the opportunity to talk for 4 hours every day about it.
You get to do it.
It's an opportunity.
You get to do it. Mm-hmm. And we listen to you. We listen to every word you say. We are hanging on every single word you say. So when you wake up in the morning next week, Monday, have a good weekend, get away for a little while. Every single day we get to talk about the Kansas City Chiefs against the Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl. Just think of other things that we could have had to talk about, okay? Just think about it, all right? This year we get to talk about the Kansas City Chiefs. Oh, boy. So I'm looking forward to every minute of your broadcast next week. All right?
So does that mean you're going to give us a good forecast?
Did you get me a Super Bowl ticket?
No. Okay. Nope. No, I got people, though.
You got people that know people.
They're called tickets for
less. I know you got that retirement money.
Yep.
Yeah. I get choked up.
Yeah, I got the time right now. That's for sure. I'm working hard with Weather 2020. It's absolutely fascinating. Somebody asked on Twitter, said, Gary, before Christmas, it turned really cold. We had a cold blast. How come we're not having a cold blast this time? It's 8 degrees outside. That's called a cold blast. I know it's sunny and beautiful. We don't get the ice storm that Texas just had. We're not getting the 30 to 40 below zero that Maine is going to have in the northeastern United States. It's 8 degrees. Today's high, 38. Tomorrow, Sunday, Monday, in the 50s to near 60. Tomorrow! All right? Can I hear some cheering, Marco? Thank you, kids. Thank you. These the kids are on my page. Thank you very much. God, what? Yeah, exactly. It's in the 70s in Arizona, but next week a cold spell. It's going to be in the 60s in Phoenix and Glendale. All right? So, but it looks pretty good. A little cool. 40s for lows, 60s for highs, predicted by Weather 2020 and the LRC weeks ago. Yes, sir. All right, that's my motivational speech of the day. Go out and have a good day. It is Friday. Enjoy the moment. Think one positive thought right now. It'll change your life. Have a good day.
Nope. That's Gary Lezak back after this on WHB.